Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi, this is Genuinely Grace. Welcome to the show. I hope you're well. Huge week in every respect. I really hope that you are coping well wherever you are, whatever you're doing right now. We've had ups and downs. I think we would cover it within the Sober Club. It's been so interesting actually this week. There's been some members sort of quite new and those baby steps, and then we've got a few other people. One woman 17 days in and feels just totally changed. Literally feels as though something has switched, and everything feels possible. I just love seeing those transformations when people do this hard thing of making this decision to ditch the booze, and then sometimes in a relatively short time just everything starts to feel possible for them, so there's been some good stuff happening. I'm so desperate to get out and meet people again. I don't know about you. This week on Radio 2, one of our guests was Andrew Ridgeley. Some of you know my dim and distant past. I was a backing singer with Wham on all their tours. And so, for Andrew to come in, or rather for Andrew to be on the show and not be able to come in, was just mad and just such a shame. I've seen him for so many years and it just would have been great. So, but anyway, it was good to chat to him. The book is really, really good. Wham, George and Me. It talks all about the kind of their growing up and the school days and getting the first band together. There's some really interesting stuff, and then obviously lots of stuff about the tours and he documents in full our trip to China. It was and I think back, wow, it's just it's before any changes in China. It just seems like almost like a dream, so bizarre. Of course, you can get the movie Wham in China, which is a quite fun watch. But anyway, so I've been a little bit down memory lane this week, albeit not in person. What else has been going on for me personally, at least? Anyway, I'm just really keen now to. I would love to know whether I'm going to be able to hold my retreats that I had planned. It feels like there's just so much uncertainty in everything right now. So my heart goes out to you if you are really struggling, if you're ill, if you are grieving, just whatever's going on for you right now. Please stay strong. I've got something that might cheer you up a bit. My guest is Eleanor Conway, comedian. She did the Walk of Shame tour, a former party girl, I think it's fair to say. There's some stuff going on beneath that out there exterior. So I hope you enjoy the interview with Eleanor. Just a reminder, if you haven't already, I would so appreciate it if you would vote for this podcast in the British Podcast Awards. I'm not in the main nominations, but there is a listener's choice vote. All you have to do is go to British Podcast Awards. .com/vote. It comes up with listener's choice. You just click on vote and you just put the name of the podcast, Alcohol Free Life. And I think you probably have to verify your email, but it won't take you more than 30 seconds or something. And I would appreciate it so much. It would just be so amazing to be to have just a few people vote for me there if the podcast has been helpful to you. Don't forget there are something like 78 shows or something now that you can listen back to. It's been my labour of love for the last coming up to, well, I suppose it must be 16 months or something now that the podcast has been running. And I've just been so incredibly fortunate to have the guests that I've been able to get to come on the show. Everyone from big names in the sober world, such as Catherine Gray and Annie Grace and Claire Pooley you know, and so many more. And then people from the self-help world, personal development world, people like Dr. David Hamilton and Neil Shah, and just so many more amazing people, and people telling their stories. And I just feel really blessed that I've been able to have such an amazing range of Quitlet authors and experts and people who are experts in their field. And we've been talking about nutrition and health and well-being and mindset. And I think that's, I hope you feel that's been the beauty of it, has been the kind of variety. But obviously it's all underpinned by that choice to ditch the booze and to scale up and live your best life, you know, but, you know, hopefully without any judgment whatsoever. And my guest this week, Eleanor, you know, we do things very, very differently. As you'll hear in the interview, Eleanor is a goes to AA, and she's part of a 12-step recovery program. And as you'll hear, her view is that's worked for her, you know, that's kept her sober. And of course, you know, as you know, that's not been my path at all. I really genuinely, I'm totally open, and it really doesn't worry me which path you choose. I think there are so many different routes to choosing to ditch the booze. But I think there are a few things that apply for everyone. And one would be to get connected, to find your tribe, however you find your tribe. And we're so fortunate that there's so much online and there's so much available now. Thank goodness there's so much online with all of this going on. And obviously, if you're interested in the Sober Club, then that's what we do. You know, we provide that support and community and accountability, but also the optimum health and well-being. So just to preempt this interview that, you know, just in case you're listening for the first time, just to preempt that personally, I haven't ever been to an AA meeting. And I do believe that it is absolutely 100% possible to choose to do this hard thing and ditch the booze and to succeed. But I do think that you do need connection. So anyways, I hope you enjoy the interview with Eleanor Conway.
My guest is the comedian Eleanor Conway. I've been wanting to interview you for so long, Eleanor. I've been hearing so much about you and the amazing work that you do. I've also been seeing a lot about you in the press in recent months, piece in The Guardian, various other places. You've been interviewed on the radio. And you've got these kind of fabulous phrases that you talk, you know, this fabulous stuff that you talk about that, a lot of us don't talk about this all the time, do we, Eleanor?
What are you talking about, Janie? What are you talking about? What are you alluding to?
What am I even alluding to? Well, the fact that you're very open about intimacy issues, shall we say. I like the line, was it that in The Guardian where I read somewhere it says, Eleanor suspects she may have intimacy issues. She always had sex on the first date and hasn't got beyond a third date in over 10 years. It's a shame because she's really good at sex.
I know. I just need someone to stick around long enough so I can really practice some advanced moves. I do these shows. So basically, I got sober nearly 6 years ago. And with that getting sober, you want to tell everybody your story. You feel really important. It's called The Pink Cloud. And as a result, I wrote a show about addiction and domestic abuse. It's much funnier than it sounds, called Walk of Shame. And it was a hit. And the fact is, I'd never been good at anything before. I'd never kept down a job before. The longest job I'd had was editing pornography in a porn studio in Surbiton. That's the only job I've never got fired from. And first, you know, I learned about consistency through getting sober. And you know, that translated into work, and Walk of Shame was a fucking hit. And I traveled, I mean, like a total addict. I toured it to over like 10 countries on a 100-date self-produced tour. Like, you will listen to my story. I'm going to, you know, but yeah. A very dogged, obsessive kickoff to my early sobriety. And it's just that level of authenticity, honesty that I share with other alcoholics or addicts. I don't know if that's a bit personal to say, but I think that's sort of moved into the way that I write and do stand up and, you know, tell stories. And so the latest show, you may recognize me from Tinder, is about the time I was a rubbish sugar baby. Mm.
let's just back up for a moment and just tell us a bit about your early days, because you were doing music presenting and stuff. I mean, you say you paint this picture of someone who's not very successful, but you've done some super interesting gigs. So tell us a little bit about your past and maybe a bit about your kind of drinking career. You know, what led you to the point of deciding you needed to ditch the booze?
Well, so I love emotionally unavailable men. That's just my thing. That's my bag. That's just what I've, you know, really nurtured my early 20s on. Ugh, can't talk. I suppose my inadvertent commas performer career started in about 2001. And I used to live two doors down from a guy called Dan who used to sell me weed. And one day he knocked on the door and he was like, "Hey, Eleanor, do you want to be a TV presenter?" And I was like, yeah. Yeah, I do, Dan. And I love Dan. He was always writing a book, but we never got to see the book. He's like, "Yeah, I'm writing a book." He's like, "Oh, what's it about?" He's like, "I can't tell you." Do you know what I mean? One of those guys, like tall, lanky guy. I wonder where he is now, but heart of gold. And I started presenting for a TV show called UK Uncovered. And this was in the early noughties. And basically UK Uncovered was like, it was a TV show, but it was like a fake TV show. So somebody, do you remember those nightclubs like Oceana and Liquid Room?
Yeah.
Right. So the company behind it was called First Leisure. And First Leisure owned like over 100 of these nightclubs around the UK.
So hold on. Let me just stop you for a minute. What year are we talking now?
We're talking about 2001.
Ah, okay. Okay. Yeah. Got it.
Or 2001. Yeah. So like they were dead during the week. So they created this fake show called UK Uncovered. And that this was before YouTube. This was before anybody, like everybody wanted to be famous. Right. And you had to get on TV to do it. So that we would go around and they'd be like, "Hey, do you want to be on TV? Okay, come to Oceana Watford on Wednesday," right? And we'd rock up in these branded like gilets and film people just dancing, and we'd get them to do like stuff on camera in return for like Blue WKDs, who were the sponsor, probably allegedly, I can't remember. I'd interview them in a pink VIP room in Yeovil or Swansea or wherever it was on a Wednesday night, and I'd get them to like show their tits for a drink. It's honestly, it's the, like, as a feminist, it's the worst kind of show that I could have done. I mean, it eventually got picked up by Nuts TV. That's the vibe of it at that time.
Wow. So amazing. Yeah. So I'm guessing that as part of this, you know, mad world, you were caning the booze.
Oh yeah. Like I've already really liked drink. I always really liked drinking. And I've got, you know, I've got a very sort of obsessive personality. So if I want to do something, even now I find it difficult, moderation and learning to moderate around sugar or exercise or romance, the stuff that I'm allowed to have in sobriety is incredibly difficult, you know. To find a, you know, it's difficult. And I just sought comfort and resolution and healing through just getting drunk, dating, doing drugs, having sex, you know. And there's a denial there.
I mean, without getting too, you know, psychotherapist on you, I'm guessing that, you know, there's not been a lot of self-esteem in those early years. So, you know, what was going on for you that kind of led you to that? Have you actually, you know, in more recent times, have you actually looked back at some of the root causes without going into detail? I'm just interested to know whether you've sort of unpacked some of that stuff.
I don't know. I mean, there are incidences in my early life, but not, you know, other people have incidences in their early life and they don't act the same way as I did. You know, I was bullied as a kid. I sought solace in ecstasy because it felt like immediate love. Mm. I think at the core of things, I'm a really sensitive person, but I have quite a hard exterior. You know, I had a bit of a turbulent early childhood, but you know, other people do too, and they don't end up like this, you know, like not like this, but like, you know, I don't know. I think I just really like drinking.
or you did, presumably. When did you make the decision that enough was enough then?
Oh, well, I think I started to make the decision in 2011, but it wasn't until 2014 that I managed to have my last drink. But I think something that I'm learning from having been sober for this long, and very recently this week, is that I stand on the periphery of stuff. I don't really get in bed. Like, I don't really go into the center of things. I'm very much stand on the periphery, observe. Yeah, I think I'd isolated myself from people. I think that's what it was. And I struggle with that now, to become less isolated. Mm. For someone that's very sociable, I am quite an isolative character. And that, they say the opposite of connection is, was it? The opposite of connection
is addiction. The opposite of addiction is connection, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. The opposite of addiction is connection. And whereas I might have gone out, met strangers in a toilet, promised we were going to chat, you know, we were going to go out together the next week, you know, but that, I thought that was connection, and essentially it's not connection. Connection is the constant contact with your friends and family, and, you know, contacting them, not just when you have problems, but just to check in and see how they are. You know, and that's how relationships are formed. But I didn't really understand that. And relationships are something that I struggle with.
So that's interesting, because, you know, you've sort of showed us just how out there you are and loud and all of those things and in your face. But actually, it sounds like underneath it all, you're really probably quite introverted, which is something that quite a lot of people find when they stop drinking, that the extrovert they thought they were, or at least they thought they were that all the time, there's quite a lot of introversion that's waiting to get out.
Yeah, that's funny, isn't it? Because I've always come from a starting point of being the loudest person in the room and going, I'm confident, of course I'm confident, but actually the more sober I get, I realize I'm probably not as, probably quite introverted. I kind of like, I don't like groups in the same way that I did before.
Mm. So when did you start to actually do a little bit more kind of introspective work then, if you did, and start actually, you know, looking after yourself?
Well, that's happened from the beginning, you know. I've done the whole thing of, like, you know, handing it over, doing the work around the resentments, and doing the amends. But learning about connection with other, you know, in church halls around the world, and code. Well, what's she talking about? We can't tell you. So the work on relationships and intimacy has really come from a place of fellowship and connecting with other women, and, you know, the sex addiction stuff, the chatting, the meeting up. Do you know what I mean? So I can get sucked into that Tinder wormhole. So I there are no dating apps on my phone at all now. I just can't do it. I just can't do it every day. You know, I've gone back so many times going, maybe it's this different this time. And it's not. For someone like me that has an addictive personality, Tinder is not good. Instagram is not also not good, nor is Facebook. But unfortunately, I need that stuff for work. Mm. But Tinder is not good. People meet people on Tinder. Don't get me wrong. My brother met his, like, wife to be on it, but for someone that's built like me, I just can't. It just sends me nuts.
I mean, surely what you really are looking for, or if you, I don't know if you are looking, but surely you, what you're open to right now, it would be a, you know, a proper something meaningful with it, like a real connection, rather than it all being a little bit flimsy.
Yeah, but I don't know how to do that at the moment.
And, I'm not trying to offer you relationship advice. Trust me. I'm really interested that you mentioned these addictions in inverted commas, and it's, I wonder if you think it's almost a given that there will be that number one, that you and others do have addictive personalities in inverted commas, and that there'll be cross addictions. Do you think that's a thing?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I know, like, there are different categories of sober people. Like, you know, you've got your sober curious people, and then you've got your sort of more 12-step-y recovery. I'm 12-step recovery. You can't show me anyone in 12-step recovery that doesn't have any cross addiction. And I would, you know, I would challenge anyone that's sober in, you know, I reckon I'm an estimate, I would say everyone has some kind of cross addiction. If you class yourself as an addict, 100%. Tinder, sugar, sex, food, gambling, shopping, exercise, all of it, you know, it's just.
And do you feel then that you're applying the same kinds of principles? Forgive me, you know, I don't know the 12-step program. I'm not au fait with it. But do you feel that you use the same principles to work with each, you know, thing, as it were? Can you, you know, because all, you know, obviously everything is moving towards uncovering the next layer and the next layer. So yeah. Are you using those same principles?
Yeah, it's a daily program. So if I'm being weird around food, or if I'm being weird around exercise, like exercising twice a day, or being weird around food, overeating, undereating, only eating one type of food, that stuff, or if I am being unmanageable in any way, shape or form around my, like my email correspondence, or like, I don't know, like the unmanageability can just seep out. If that's happening, I know that I need to step up my meetings. I know I need to call three people, you know, I need to look at what I'm not doing in my daily life, you know. I nearly picked up a drink about a week and a half ago, and it, you know, I had to really just drill back to my program and get to a meeting every day, do two meetings every day, call three people, do a gratitude list, do all that stuff that keeps me connected.
What led you to that point? Because I'm always interested when people say, you know, that I don't know whether you use the word relapse or whatever word you want to use, you know, tripped up, whatever the word is. I'm guessing you looked back and were able to say, okay, before that happened, this happened, or this was the thought process, or this was what was going on.
I think I just wasn't working a program, if that's... You know, when you are in a program, a 12-step program, you have to continually do it every day. Otherwise, just to keep the bank topped up, because you don't know when you're going to relapse. You don't go, oh, I'm probably going to relapse next Tuesday, so I'll just smash some meetings in the week before, just to make sure, just to make sure I don't do it. But since I just felt like, so I'd had some financial uncertainty. And what I'd done as a result of the financial uncertainty is I'd overbooked in a lot of online shows. So I'd overcompensated because I was scared, you know, some financial insecurity, the inability, because live comedy's off, the inability to make that money or to be able to dig my way out of any, you know, I can't make any income using what I'm like used to using. So just, I think just on one level, I fucking got scared. And I just, when I sit in fear, I am just, I've got a very cyclical mind. So I'll be like, oh God, you know, oh God, what if this doesn't happen? This is definitely not going to happen. And it's this, oh God, what am I going to do about this flat? Oh my God, I'm going to have to move in with my mum. Oh my God, if she lives in Liverpool. Oh, what about this? My career's going to go, do you know what I mean? And I will go to, and I will just flipping leapfrog from every thought into like some ecstasy, you know, into infinity, into the future of what might, could or should happen, you know. And I will sit in that and I can't break it, and that's what makes me want to drink. That's why I want to drink in those moments. I 100% thought, right, I cannot sit like this, because I've been sat like this for like 3 or 4 days, just like, you know, waking up in the morning feeling okay and then just having that sense of dread that anxiety provoked. And I thought, fuck, you know, maybe I should just drink, because if I drink, then I'll be able to black out, and that will be some semblance of a bit of peace, you know, a bit of peace for a moment. And I just thought, right, I'm gonna go to Sainsbury's. That's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna go to Sainsbury's, gonna get a bottle of wine, and I'm gonna show you all, right? I'm gonna show you all. I don't know who you are, but I'm gonna show you lot. I'm gonna show you all, right?
It's that kind of self saboteur, isn't it, going on there?
Yeah, I just want to press the fuck it button.
Yeah. So what happened? How did you get out of it?
Oh, well, I got the bottle of wine, got it in my hand, marched it to the cash register. And then just before I did, I just sort of had a real play it forward moment. I just thought, right, okay, where's this going to end up?
Yeah.
Well, the money that you've got saved, that will go.
Yeah.
You'll probably damage some relationships. You won't be sober enough to sort out any impending financial things. You know, I'm the kind of person that used to just ignore letters. I used to ignore them.
Yeah.
Right. And now I read my letters so I can stop nip things in the bud. But I just thought I'm just going to throw it up in the air and I'll, what situation am I going to end up in? You know? And I just managed, and I think the most important thing was I'm supposed to be celebrating 6 years next month. Mm. I was like, I want to pick up a chip.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that I find this really fascinating that it can be, you know, because sometimes people will ask me, oh, when will the cravings, in inverted commas, or the triggers, you know, stop? And of course, there is no one answer for everyone, obviously. But it's interesting that you know, you hear of people that have been sober for years and years, and then suddenly there's this trip up. I mean, whether it's suddenly or not is another matter. But, you know, I don't know. What are your feelings on that now then? So a little, you know, a week on or whatever. I'm guessing you're super grateful that you were able to play that forward.
Yeah, I'm a little bit embarrassed actually, because it's embarrassing, isn't it? You know, because I had to really rely on people and a lot, you know, people just pulled me out. I was just giving people, I'm on the phone, I'm giving one word answers. I'm like, you know, by that point I've become so hard to reach that, you know, it really took some effort to get out of it just mentally. Looking back on it, yeah, it's hard to believe that I felt that way. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Mm. It's really hard because now I'm still anxious. I'm always an anxious person, but now, I don't know, it just amazes me to see how I've bounced back in relatively a short time. Mm. But it also is quite scary, really.
Yeah. And what have been the, you know, I mean, in terms of sort of mental health and anxiety and all that stuff, have you seen a really big improvement, you know, generally before all of this, perhaps, you know, since you stopped drinking?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah. You know, I'm able to hold back a little bit. I think before sometimes I create drama because I want something to move or happen, but I think a lot of progress happens in the stillness. Mm. So don't go in and mess up a situation because you feel like you're anxious about a situation. Just sit back, see how the situation, you know, unfolds. So yeah, I'm a lot more chill, and you know, I've got a network of women that I can call on and use a soundboard. I can kind of go, am I being a bit mad here? And they're like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Or they'll just be like, no, that's a fair thing. And mm. there's just a real feeling of sisterhood, you know, in my form of recovery.
Yeah. Have you got your sort of, you know, resources, you know, around you? Have you kind of got your list of what you need? Because I think sometimes it's that thing of when you get these moments and everything just feels like it's falling apart, you can't even remember what it is you like. You know, you can't remember what can take you out of this. And it's almost like you need a kind of note on the wall to say, when I'm feeling this crap, I have to go for a walk in nature, or I have to go and lie down on the earth, or I have to read a book, or I have to clean my teeth, you know, sort of the basics. I mean, I'm guessing you've been doing that stuff for years.
No, not really. But, well, yeah, I mean, look, I've got a sponsor and she just gave me it. Like, she's just like, are you doing this? I'm like, no. Are you doing this? No, well, go and do them and then tell me how you feel afterwards. Mm. You know, the whole point of being in recovery is that you have that network of people that are just like, there is a system. All you got to do is really basic. Just go to a meeting, call three alcoholics, write a gratitude list and work the steps. Mm. And I think if you're not in if you're not in 12 step, I mean, I feel like it must be quite difficult, to do it without that. I don't know, but It feels like an almost more difficult task because you don't have that framework. But the form of connection through the communities online, you know, it's almost the same as 12 step. Do you know what I mean? There's you know, it's about one alcoholic sharing their experience and connecting on that level and realizing that, you know, there's nothing to be ashamed of, and we're pretty much all the same.
Yeah. Yeah. Just tell us about the Walk of Shame show that, as you say, it did phenomenally well. What do you think people got from that? Well, and are still, you know, what was the kind of you know, what, you know, blow your own trumpet. Tell us what you're proud of about that.
Well, I think it was, I mean, it was a story of a party girl that got sober, and it was rough and it was ready. Mm. And, you know, I talked about, the whole domestic abuse thing. It's a very funny bit. It's not like a one woman monologue with a support group at the end. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's very funny, but, I think people got the honesty and the rawness of it.
Yeah.
And, I think my relationship to that part of the show is specific. Well, actually it's quite accessible because I talk about it comes from the point of view of a girl's night out, in the sense that we've all been there. Do you know what I mean? You go, like, the kind of like tropes of a party girl going out and just, you know, those sort of stories. But then it's got this sort of dark twist. And, you know, when I wrote it, I was like really, really newly sober. So all this stuff, specifically the hitty stuff, which I'm now going to call it as that, the hitty stuff. I'm fine now. Sorry if it's triggering. That was the most unsensitive way to bring that topic in. The hitty stuff. Oh my God. Yeah. Okay. But I was kind of like, the way that I presented that at the beginning, my relationship towards that story changed as I went along, because in the beginning, I was almost scared to tell that story, that people would blame me, that people would feel like I deserved it. But there was something within me that had to say it out loud, because I was recovering from this, you know, I was coming out of drinking a lot and newly sober, and I really clearly hadn't dealt with the trauma of this. So I basically used the audience as therapy.
Yeah.
But the wonderful thing about it is that afterwards I got so much connection afterwards. People messaging me, coming up to me after the show, just, I really connected with it. Feeling that love from somebody that's, you know, been in that dark place, and kind of feeling the connection from the audience, just really prepared me for a future life of too much information.
Yeah. But I guess, you know, on a serious note, that, you know, that just to be able to speak about this stuff, there will be many, many people who watch that who will have experienced, you know, something not a million miles apart, and they were holding that as some kind of guilt and shame within them. Yeah. So to have you speak about it so openly was probably genuinely, you were probably genuinely able to release something in them that probably otherwise would have been kept deep and dark until it kicked off in a really bad way.
Absolutely. Look, you know, I was always quite shameful about the stuff that I'd done, the things that I'd experienced. And, you know, I do think women aren't really allowed to own their own seedy, shameful secrets in the same way that men get to. Mm. And it just felt quite empowering to be able to share that and have women and men just be like, yeah, I've experienced something similar, or just get little mum hugs at the end was just really great. And I just think, I don't know. I just really like, I mean, I have no idea what I'm going to do for the next show. Like, something bad. I don't want to tempt fate, but like, I don't know, maybe I'm just going to do a U-turn, and the next one's just going to be about bread. Cause I'm genuinely, I'm just the most boring person now. Like, I don't take drugs. I don't have any kind of like casual sex. I just don't do anything now. I don't know. Maybe that's the biggest form of punk. Maybe that's the most maverick thing I can do. Maybe.
I mean, really fascinated to see what you come up with next. I think it's I think there's an awful lot more to you than you've shared, you know, so far in your shows. I think it'd be really interesting. Tell us about what you have going on currently then, your big night in.
Well, right. So I don't know. So basically I'm trying to hold off making some mad, crazy, like long-term decisions because I've nearly relapsed. And also because I don't know what's going to happen. So what I've been doing is I've been doing a show a week. So every Friday and Saturday at 8 p.m. GMT time, I just basically do one of my shows and people join me on Zoom, and it's really great. It's really fun. It's really good. It's really good. And I've been doing that.
Cool.
It's been really good. So next, well, I don't know when this is going to go out, but yeah, just check my website and just see which show. I'm just deciding week by week though, because before, obviously I was like, I'm going to dominate. I'm going to like conquer the world. So I was like, I'm going to do them every week. And then I'm going to do Australian ones. And then I'm going to do a midweek one. And I'm never going to stop doing it. Right. And then I just crashed and went, oh, this is not, I can't do this.
I mean, quite a few of us have had that. I was going to, you know, literally write several books and, you know, create online courses and learn a language and Joe Wicks every day. And didn't actually do that.
Did you?
No, I've managed to keep the podcast going. I'm proud of myself for that.
Well, I think, you know, but I think it's really important to keep things, you know, I think, no one's gone through this period and not had a low moment. I would be very suspicious of anyone.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's great to chat to you, and I wish you all the best with whatever comes next. Tell us your website then so people can know where to find you.
Oh, please come and find me at elenaconway.com. I'll be just dropping the weekly shows, just being like, oh, this week I'm doing this show at this time. And then Facebook and Instagram as well. Do follow me. Just Elena Conway, really. There.
Got it. Brilliant. Thank you, Eleanor. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jamie.
So check out Eleanor Conway's Big Night In, and please remember to go to britishpodcastawards.com /vote and vote for me in that Listener's Choice Award. I'd so appreciate that. Got some great guests lined up in the future. By the way, thank you to those of you who dropped me a message. A couple of people dropped me a message and gave me some suggestions of guests. I would love to hear your views. I'd love the guests to be as diverse as possible, and I don't know everyone and I don't have connections with everyone, but your suggestions are so valued. So please continue to do that if you have any ideas for me. Obviously, I'd love it if you'd rate and review the podcast. And of course, check the stuff out on Instagram that I post on there at Jamie Lee Grace, and on Facebook, of course. And obviously, check out the Sober Club. I did mention before that we're going to do a bit of restructuring in the Sober Club. So if you do want to come and join us, now would be the time. There is a small monthly fee. There is masses of content, masses of stuff going on that we do there. And we have an online course, Get the Buzz Without the Booze, not to mention exclusive bits from our podcast guests, and just an amazing accountability. We have Zoom meetings. You can check it out. It's www.thesoberclub.com. Make sure you have a good week. Stay safe. Please stay connected. Feel free to get in touch. If you are struggling right now, if you're feeling down and you're feeling out of sorts, I thought it was really interesting that Eleanor, you know, goes really quite in depth as to how sometimes those feelings of just anxiety can just really, just really, really take hold. And I'm always really conscious that, you know, I always try and be really upbeat about ditching the booze and really positive. But, you know, I'm 100% aware that there are people who are really suffering. So if that's you, do reach out for help, because there's so much help available out there to you. So reach out for help and you know, reach out to me. If I can't support you, I can pass you on to somebody that can, hopefully. So don't suffer in silence. That's the most important thing. I'll look forward to seeing you same time next week. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.